Gwei, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Spilling Lavender Tea Under Cedar Trees with Kate and Mads.
Yes, welcome to this sunny Saturday.
Sunny Saturday. Mm, yeah. Well, it's kind of cloudy.
It's good. Yeah, but it's bright.
But it's blinding.
Well, what are we doing today?
We are going to do another episode on colonization.
Another one!
Who knew so many places were colonized? But today we're going to cover our colonization impacts on the First Nations people of Turtle Island.
Mm-hmm. So coming to you live and direct, we have two fabulous people, Marlo and Peter. And I'll let Marlo introduce yourself.
Thank you, Kate. And thank you, Madeline. I'm really excited to be here with you all today. Ani Bojo, Marlo Indigenous Cause, Wikwem Kong Dun Jeba, Wikwem Kong Dun Ji, Anishinaabe and out. So my name is Marlo and I am from Sudbury, Ontario, or in Suwakamuk, and I live now in Wikwamakong, which is the First Nation where my father is from. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's all good.
I'm a queer Indigenous youth, and oh my goodness.
Honestly, intros are terrible. Like, I hate them. So
especially going first.
And you're like, all ears are on me right now.
And I'm really passionate about community building, that's all I'll share right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know,
that's all good. That's perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. And Marlo and I became friends because of participating in a program. Marlo was my project lead. Mm-hmm. And very fortunate to have met you and still have you around in my life. So I'm glad you were able to join us today.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Peter.
Hi, Squidgel, Hela, listeners. Hello, my name is Peter Underwood. I am from Husseinich and Norway. I also have like familial ties to Nez Perce and Samish, just across the border. And now I live just outside my nation in Lekwungen territories, on Vancouver Island, west coast of Canada. For all the international listeners,
you know, we do have people listen
Germany. We're hitting Germany.
Mm-hmm. I'm never really know how to describe myself, but I like to organize some really cool things. I always like to work on a few projects. Mm-hmm. Whether that be like programs, like creating new programs, running them, events, workshops, some cultural things. I'm working on helping out with a Two-Spirit and Ojibwe conference with the goal of creating a resource or several resources for family members on how to support their queer youth, their relatives.
That's amazing. That's
nieces, awesome. Nibblings, yeah. Hmm.
Nibblings. I love it. Yeah. So good.
I love the word nibbling because it seems like sibling, and I'm an only child, a lonely child. But I have plenty of nibblings. It's nice to see them around. For those that might not know, nibbling is like niece or nephew. Yeah.
That's super cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then Peter and I met in the journey of school.
The great journey of school.
The great journey of school. My on again, off again relationship with college. Mm. That's how I made good friends.
Yeah. Everyone loves post-sec.
It's good networking.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it's been many years with both of these fine folks.
It has. It has. And I've had the joy of meeting them both through many different events. So.
Yeah. We are very happy that you get to join us in our space and also get to join us on our podcast. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if everyone's comfortable, feeling good, I'm going to get started on the questions. All right. So obviously we've been talking about colonialism across the globe and the impacts that's had on us, both like as a whole nation, and then our individual experiences as well. So basically our first question is, and either one of you can start us off, is what has been your nation's experience and or your personal experience, whichever you prefer to speak to?
I can go.
Yeah, sure.
I said that, but then I'm not kidding. Oh, wow. Oh, that is a question for sure. Yeah, so I'm probably going to be speaking, I will be speaking for Pusinich. I mean, Norway wasn't colonized in the same way. Norway has been, like, owned by other countries, like, several times, and celebrates an Independence Day from, most recently, is Sweden, but it's definitely not the same. Mm-hmm. And my other nations, like, I'm not as, I wasn't growing up with those cultures specifically. Yeah. Of course, Samish is pretty similar to Pusinich. They're not very far. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'll be speaking about Pusinich. And, yeah, Pusinich has been colonized for, like, a long time, as, like, most nations have been. But I guess, like, being on the West Coast, it came a little bit later in some ways than out east. So colonization throughout, like, the West Coast looks differently in a lot of ways. Like, I don't need to get into all of that, but part of it is, too, that especially in Coast Salish territories, like, Coast Salish is, like, a super group, like a, I don't know the exact term, but like a name for like many different nations, like Scandinavia is to several different countries. Mm-hmm. And especially within Coast Salish territory, but also in the surrounding area, the nations here are generally pretty small. Mm. One of the stories I heard, which I think is like a modern story for sure, is that when Creator was creating what's now known as like North America or Turtle Island, he had a basket of peoples to put onto the lands, and he would put them, you start on the East Coast, putting them here and there, and then he got to like interior and started placing different peoples, placing Cree, Anishinaabe, like all sorts of different people, got his way closer to the West Coast and looked into his basket and had just so many nations, so many peoples to put on the earth still. So he put so many of them in BC, the West Coast area. And that's apparently why there's so many nations around here. Small ones, yeah. Yeah, so being a small nation, that means that there hasn't been like some of the larger structures we see out east, and not like large like land masses of reserves, like especially you see in the US, but also like the plains of Canada, I guess. Mm-hmm. And yeah, at least in Pusinich, like the whole divide and conquer idea was really used like to colonize Pusinich. Mm-hmm. So Pusinich is all throughout islands, like throughout like an archipelago, between the big island, Vancouver Island, and the mainland. And there's been a lot of divisions. One of them is that all the people that were living on the islands were forced onto, I think, some areas of those islands, but then eventually, like, just off of the islands entirely and onto Vancouver Island, onto the Pusinich Peninsula, which sticks out of, like, what's now Victoria, BC. And it's close to our islands, but like being on the peninsula on the big island, that would be like our traditionally our winter home. So people would go out into the islands, into their like family's territories, but then come to some of the villages on the peninsula. But then the islands weren't, like, we were blocked in many ways from going to the islands. I've heard it was, like, illegal to even canoe, like, between islands because of the ferries were introduced, and apparently, like, indigenous people were supposed to be getting free use of the ferries in place of getting around traditionally, but that, I don't think that ever happened, and if it did, it was, like, for, like, a quick second. Yeah, and now all the reserves, like, where people live, at least, are just on the peninsula. There are some reserves, I don't know all the history about, like, legally when they were obtained, or, you know, like, obtained. But, yeah, we have a few reserves that I only saw in my 20s. I was part of a program where we, like, would be reconnecting with our islands. Like, the islands, we would call them Tlatlachus, which means, our relatives of the deep. And that comes from a story where, Creator throws a lot of things in our nation. So when he was creating, like, the territories, he had some dark black stones that he threw into the ocean to create into islands. And he told the people that, this is, like, a very quick story, that those are our relatives and that we must take care of them and they'll take care of us. And yeah, so the program was called Tlatlachus, and it connected Husseinish youth to the islands to learn a lot about so many different things too, like a lot about environmentalism and effects of colonization and several things. So I got to see, I think, all of the small reserves we have on our islands. They are very small, like, no one lives there. I don't think anyone really could live there because they're so small, and I don't think even have, like, water or sewage and things like that there. But it was really nice to be out there and reconnect with those islands. That's only part of it, though, too, because the border between Canada and the U.S. also separated a lot of our nation. So the archipelago that I'm kind of referring to is broken into two sections. There's the Canadian side, which they call the Gulf Islands, and the American side, which they call the San Juan Islands. San Juan was one of the Spanish explorers that was hired by, not Spain, but I think someone else to, like, explore. Maybe the English? I don't know. But for some reason, there was a lot of, like, Spanish explorers around here, like, as in early colonization. So there's still some remains of, like, Spanish names here and there. And they're really just, like, right beside each other, but it's the border that separates them. So ferries don't really go between the islands. They stay to, like, within their part of the borders, like, islands. So the border separated us, like, water in a way has separated us when it's been a way that's connected us historically. Like, there's been a lot of, like, geographical ways to, like, separate peoples. They also separated the villages of Husseinish being the one nation. They made each village into its own, like, band or, like, First Nation reserve, with, like, their own governance structure and, like, separate funding, separate populations. Like, you can't be a member of two, you can only be a member of, like, one of them. It's just so different than what you'd expect. You'd think everyone would kind of be, like, Husseinish and maybe be registered with one of the reserves or, like, villages or something. Yeah, but you really can only be one. And yeah, that's been part of, like, an impact on our nation too. Recently, there has, like, some people have created the Husseinish Leadership Council, which has representatives from each of the elected bands and some other, like, community leaders to kind of as a way to, like, unite our nation. I don't know much on what their goals are. It is, like, on their website, and I've read a bit of it, but I don't want to speak on it, at least. But I'm really excited by the idea of, like, people starting to say Husseinish more and, like, come together more. Of course, like, nations generally have always been a little complicated in Coast Salish territory, because there are some neighboring nations or, like, reserves that some people think have been part of Wasanich, and some people don't, and like, yeah. Mm. I think like depending on where you are too, like some areas are kind of have like relations with like all their neighbor nations. Like half of my cousins, I feel like, are part Cowichan or married into Cowichan or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because our nations are so small. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's been a lot of impacts on things geographically and like politically, of course, too. Mm-hmm. But of course, like culturally too. We definitely were affected by residential schools, mm-hmm. and day schools. So people were sent to residential schools to a few different places. They would often like send some siblings to one and some to another to like further divide families, yeah. too. Yeah. So some were sent to the closest one was like Cooper Island Residential School, which is like an hour and a half up island and then like a ferry ride across. Mm-hmm. And then also to like further way up island, even into the interior, even Kamloops Residential School. And yeah, and then there were day schools too. So a lot of my relatives went to day schools, and there was like a day school at Sartlip, the Sartlip Indian Day School. And all those schools were really meant to like introduce like Western education, ideas, culture, and really like block any like traditional culture or language. So students were like beaten or made to like chop wood for hours and hours if they spoke their language, or all sorts of different punishments for both residential school and day school. Yeah, and also the environment has had a lot of impact from colonization too. Mm-hmm. There's been, you know, like landfills put up, like when garbage wasn't even something we had a word for before, like before colonization. There's like so much of the land, even like linguistically, has been colonized. So almost everything, every creek, every hill and mountain is named after someone's last name, from some colonizer or some settler who just had that land for like what, 1.5 generations, mm-hmm. like so long, like some people claim.
So long.
Yeah. And like some of them are like just creeks named after like settlers, of course, but they would be named after what was in the area traditionally. So there's like areas that would be like the place of like certain medicines would grow and it'd be named after that, and you know, like, oh, that's a good place to go to get that medicine. Mm-hmm. One like classic example too is this one creek near Gowlandtod, like it's in Gowlandtod Park, now also known as like, or reclaimed as Sngiquef. Mm-hmm. And beautiful park, by the way. But there's a river there that was traditionally called like Huchacha or Huchachacha. And it was called that after the sound that the water would make passing over the stone, the rocks in that area, mm. as it would like flow through. What was it called? I forgot what it was named after, but it's named after some, maybe it's Gowlandtod Creek or something like that on paper. But the way that it was like also attacked is that area was used as like a concrete or cement, I'm still not sure of the difference, cement factory, where they would also like do like the, I think they would mine some of the limestone, but also process it there. Mm. So there's a lot of that sediment in the inlets, like on the mm-hmm. ocean floor, but also in the creek. So the creek doesn't make that same sound as it used to. So, like, mm. is it even fair to call it Puchachacha anymore if that's not what it's, like, calling itself? Because, mm-hmm. like, really, mm-hmm. it wasn't people that named it, like, the river named itself that in a way, yeah. too. Mm-hmm. Because it was saying that. But now it says something different. Mm-hmm. And then the bottom of that inlet, because there's so much sediment, the eelgrass isn't able to grow, and without the eelgrass, there's like that forms its own ecosystem too. And yeah. so there's not much really going on in there. And there's boats still coming through there that stir up all the sediments mm-hmm. and block out all the sunshine, and nothing, like no plants can grow at the bottom there.
Petunia's going for a cup of tea.
She's like, me too.
So really, like, in all sorts of ways, Pusanage has been colonized. Definitely a big question, but I think I'm going to leave it at that for now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh my gosh.
Thank you for sharing that mm-hmm. with us. That was so interesting. And also, like, living here for such a long time, but not quite hearing what has happened in neighboring nations.
Yep.
And also to just touched part of my heart when it comes to geography.
But also the eelgrass.
Yes,
I've learned a lot about eelgrass recently.
Yeah, doing my master's in geography, and so having a lot of passion for maps of recent. Mm. And actually a lot of people in my master's program and the PhD program of geography are studying eelgrass. Wow. And so we've had lots of folks come to us and talk to us about eelgrass.
Also, it's just do you know any fun facts about eelgrass?
I wish I could say I could, but, like, it's gonna be hard for folks at home to, like, know what I'm doing, but, like, all I have to think about when I think of eelgrass, I think of this. Oh. I'm just, like, moving back and forth, and just, like, how much of a role it actually plays in ecosystems.
Yes. It's kind of like the kelp.
Yeah. And folks just, like, not caring for it in the way that needs to be cared for. Mm-hmm. But some of my friends are doing, like, really important research around like how to revitalize eelgrass and take care of it properly.
And properly educating people on, like, the importance of eelgrass for the ecosystem and stuff.
Yeah.
I hear more and more about people really trying to, like, restore eelgrass specifically, which is really cool. And I wouldn't do it justice to, like, explain it. But the ways that they plants on the ocean floor underwater is really cool, and I definitely recommend people to, like, look it up.
Oh, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, because, like, you can't just swim down there and plant a bunch of things.
Just scuba dive.
Carry the basket. It'll float off.
Whoa. Well, speaking about different geographies and different geographical areas, Marlo, coming from us from Sudbury.
Peter, what you shared is like the different levels of impact, and like you shared so beautifully the stories, and so miigwech for that. I'm happy to be in conversation with you. So I think, like, or as I was reflecting on the question, I think the immediate way that I could relate to it or kind of, like, think of what my reflection and response would be is like very just on a personal, like, embodied level. And so something that just, like, in the last few years, what I've really discovered is how the impacts or different impacts of colonialism has really brought me or really separated me from my body and from my spirit as well. And in that, I also, like, the word disconnection is like a theme that repeats itself in connection with kin and connection with the land. And I think that in the last years, as I've been on a particular journey of reconnection, the more that I, and as I regain that connection and realize what I was missing for so long, then kind of, like, grieving that I didn't have that deep connection to my own spirit and to my kin and to the land from the start of my journey on Earthside. And that I know, yeah, so that's like in the last while, that's how I've been reflecting on how I personally am impacted by colonialism. And I feel like also, like, as I'm on this like self-learning journey, there are things that I will continue to discover too, and like I'm working on a project right now where a couple of my cousins and I are planning to build a sweat lodge in Wiki, where I live now, and I think that, yeah, just like starting to walk on that journey, I have felt really nervous and like almost like imposter feeling of like wait, like, is it okay if I do this, or like, mm-hmm. who am I to be mm-hmm. carrying this, or like trying to carry this? And even that, like that, like imposter feeling, it's so much like a result of colonialism, of like our the things that we have as gifts as Indigenous people, mm-hmm. Were devalued and taken from us, like our ability to be so connected to mm-hmm. life around us. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and I forgot to start off with sharing what nations I am a part of. I'm Anishinaabe, with roots in Wiquemecong, on Manitoulin Island in Ontario. And I also have Haudenosaunee ancestry on my mother's side. My grandfather is from Ganawage. Mm. But I grew up with Anishinaabe teachings for the most part, and I always like had knowledge of my roots and connections in my grandfather's lineage, but never, or definitely didn't grow up with those teachings being shared with me. And I mean, of course, that's like another personal or an impact that I've experienced personally is like not having connection to either or to the Haudenosaunee lineage, mm-hmm. and the different like cultural knowledge and language, and then also I think even as I know, or like I have more familiarity with like Anishinaabe ways of being, mm-hmm. There's still so much that I don't that I like don't know yet, or mm-hmm. haven't remembered yet, mm-hmm. And so yeah, I think that's like something that feels really important for me to share. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's totally understandable. I mean, I feel like we Caitlin and I had a conversation kind of like that when, the spoiler alert, mm-hmm. after watching Wakanda Forever, mm-hmm. and there was, like, that certain scene where they went to the underwater, city, and I was, like, I told her, I was, like, I started crying mm-hmm. because I was, like, that's something that I feel like, I missed out on from, like, getting to be, experience that with my own nation and getting to see it at, like, its most beautiful point. And mm-hmm. not that it's not beautiful as it is, there's just, I know that there's just so much struggle and, like, trying to get everything back, and trying to, like, keep mm-hmm. things going, and just knowing, like, if colonization didn't happen, like, where would, what would it have looked like now? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I understand that, like, that longing of just being, like, that kinship and just having that connection to this culture fully and not having any doubts about that connection. And just imposter syndrome is just a disgusting disgusting thing that unfortunately we all experience, and especially those of us that are still like are connected but still trying to connect further and like try to reclaim as much as we can. And
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Oh my goodness, Madeline and I cried during that whole entire film movie. but it's interesting that, like, I like the way you phrase that, Mar, of, like, something I just haven't remembered yet.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because this morning when I was getting ready before all you fine folks came over, was, I was thinking about a time, I think I was trying to explain it to someone, or, I don't know, I just keep having this reoccurring thought
mm-hmm.
of, prior to getting to go to Nunavut, trying to explain or express of, like, having to long for a place that you've never been to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, longing for a place that you know is your home and know that's home
mm-hmm.
without being able to visit there in the physical. And mm-hmm. I guess it's that part of that piece of, like, I was remembering what Nunavut was like,
yeah.
even though I wasn't there physically yet mm-hmm. in this timeline, but now I've gone back and...
All that blood memory.
Yeah, like, so much.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just to... So that is, like, that way, or, like, speaking of that concept, it's something that I learned from... Alexis Pauline Gums, and they like the way they or she spoke of it is that, like, just thinking of the word remember and what it means, it means that it's like it's already a part of us mm-hmm. and yeah, and like you're saying, like, blood memory and also, like, our connection with all things, mm-hmm. And our connection with our ancestors, they're there for us,
mm-hmm.
If we're open, and receptive to them, and, yeah, so, like, we have that knowledge, available to us in different ways that we like can continue on a pathway to find and mm-hmm. and remember those things.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you both have already kind of touched on the next question a little bit, but it would be nice if we can go a little bit more in depth of, like what steps do you know within your own nations or even personally are being taken to, like, reclaim culture, language,
land
at this point. Hashtag land back. So, yeah, like, what work are you seeing is being done?
Anybody can hop in.
Rock, paper, scissors. Let's do this.
Okay. I'll continue and share. At home, back in Wiki, so I moved there 2 years ago, and just recently, like in the last year or so, just down the road from me, there's... one of the elders there inherited a space, a home from their relative, and they opened up it's a language lodge, and they have weekly drop-ins, or multiple times a week, that where they just speak the language, and they have socials and crafting, crafting nights as well. So that's something that's happening very locally to me. As I mentioned before, something that a couple of my cousins and I are doing, is we're, planning to build, a sweat lodge and apprentice with an elder, from our community. And so we're in the beginning stages of that, but our plan is to, the three of us plus, maybe 10 other youth to do that learning all alongside each other. And the vision or the goal for that is to then, or for all of us to then be carriers of those sweat lodge teachings. So that's something that's been a dream for years, for me and my cousins, and something that's again on a personal or a personal level, something that is taking place. And I think it's I think the ceremonies that continue are starting to take place more frequently, and more people are being drawn back to ceremony and taking those practices up. Mm-hmm. Those are some things that are happening locally within my nation.
That's so beautiful and very impactful. That's gonna change mm-hmm. so many young people's lives.
It really will.
It's gonna heal a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're so special, Marlo. I'm so glad.
It's gonna be beautiful.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, Petunia and Peter have been.
She needs to call me chaos.
She wants to be so included.
She's usually quiet. She usually just passes out when we do recordings. But then she's hello.
Yeah. She probably thinks it's strange that we're just sitting here because she can't hear our conversation. Yeah.
We joke and say that she's also an executive producer.
Truly.
Yeah. She's a little bit of a micromanager today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mess up the Christmas lights. That's what we're going to do. Yeah, and then her beautiful little gentle sneeze.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do love to hear about sweat lodge revitalization. Mm-hmm. I think that's so important culturally, spiritually, for people's health, so many reasons. I've been able to participate in some sweat lodge days, and that's something that is definitely a discussion in Husseinich to be having. A lot of people think that that's not part of our culture, mm-hmm. but my uncle, great uncle, that's Petunia.
Get out of here.
saying? Oh, he, whenever someone says that, like, sweat lodge culture isn't part of ours, then he says, like, how come we have words and language for it? Mm-hmm. How come that's something that we, yeah, would have had terms for?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If it isn't part of our culture. So to his understanding, and to my understanding too, it's something that's, like, practice was kind of, like, lessened or lost over the years. So now when there's, like, sweat lodge ceremonies, like, it's with people from other nations. So it's something that's, like, nice to participate in, but tricky to, like, be very aware of, like, how much is, like, would this have been part of our culture? And, like, yeah, mm-hmm. how much of this is from other cultures? Like, yeah. What is the overlap? Like, it's hard to really know. But yeah, really beautiful. Like, yeah, seems like a really healthy practice to be having in community. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of things that I would like to share about kind of cultural resurgence and re-indigenization of the territories. Sorry, was that being picked up?
Yeah. I mean, I heard it, but I don't know if the mic heard it. Oh, well. No, like, you'll have a cupcake
after.
We have really great microphones.
Oh, and really great looking cupcakes. I'm so looking forward to, like, biting into that. Yeah, so again, like, I can touch on the topics from earlier, like environmental. There's, yeah, definitely a lot of people advocating for restoration of the lands and waters. Definitely waters is a big part of it, us being, like, a coastal nation. Yeah, like, people say land back a lot, but I'm really excited to hear people say ocean back and ice back and sky back even sometimes. Like, so many things have been affected. It really isn't just the land. And when people say land, like, most of the time people mean, like, territories or, like, areas. Yeah. But, yeah, there are different approaches to take when advocating for ocean back or water back because it's, like, no one owns, like, property for a house on an ocean. So it's, like, owned in different ways, managed in different ways. Like, it's literally, like, liquid. So one pollutant can affect, like, so much of an area because it all flows into each other. Yeah, people are planting plants, taking out invasives, restoring, like, populations of fish and other populations, sometimes without even permission. I just heard that Nez Perce Nation, to restore salmon populations, they'd asked the, whatever their DFO, I guess, is, if they could, you know, take care of some salmon eggs and then reintroduce them into the waters, but then they said no for some reason.
Like, cool, I'm gonna do it anyway.
So they did it anyway. Yeah, they really did. And then it worked. Yeah. And then they're like, hey, this is working. Yeah. Let's officially continue to do this.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
Whoa.
And I'm sure there's been, like, a lot of that throughout the territories, even here in Wasanich and everywhere else too. And I love that. I love just, like, doing something anyway because you know it's, like, for the benefit of whatever you're benefiting. But yeah, so both, like, biologically, like, in the land with other living creatures and non-living things too, but linguistically, like I was saying too, people have reclaimed names, like, reintroduced our traditional names to a lot of places, and I love that movement so much. I think because I was, like, involved in, like, one big event in high school, like, a pretty, like, young age, there's a mountain in Victoria that was traditionally called Pcols, which means white rock. Another story where creator throws things. Wow, I've never noticed this theme as much as I have today.
He just likes to throw things.
Yeah. So apparently, I think it's maybe the same time, like, same story, like an extension of the same story. Possibly.
I would hope.
But, I'm definitely realizing, like, I did not tell enough of the some details from an earlier story, but we'll save that for another time. If you catch me outside of this podcast, ask me for a story. I need to practice them anyway.
Yeah.
Creator threw some white stones to different parts of Kosila's territory. that grew into mountains, one of them being Pakols, which means like white rock or white head, because of the white stone you can see on it. Mm. And then to some other places. One of the other places is now like very commonly known for being called White Rock, even in English. Part of the same story, like he would have thrown it across the Salish Sea onto the mainland. Mm. But this mountain was renamed to Cedar Hill, which now is like an area, and like a lot of street names are called Cedar Hill and things like that. But there isn't a Cedar Hill that people really know of. But then I think because they like logged it so much, it wasn't as like cedary as before. Mm. But also they, I think, wanted to name it again, rename it after a settler, a colonizer, James Douglas. Mm-hmm. Some people know him as the father of British Columbia, the colonial state here.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Yes. Love that.
So then it became known as Mount Doug or Mount Douglas. Mm-hmm. But when I was in high school, the name was reinstated, to some degree at least, as Pakols. Mm-hmm. So there's a beautiful sign crafted, and some people carried it up the mountain. We all walked with them, and then it was installed. Some stories were told about the territories, about the local treaties, or potential like lack thereof. There's really complicated stories about treaties. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was like a really big movement that got a lot of attention, especially when like Indigenous languages weren't much of a thing. This would have been in 2012 or 2013. And yeah, I had barely seen Tsimshian anywhere, even as a Tsimshian person. Like, I was just starting to learn it because they had just started to offer classes. Mm-hmm. And like the language has come so much too in over time. And just recently, I think they've further ratified the renaming of Pakols. Mm. I don't know exactly what that means. I think it's more like maybe on maps it's called that instead of it just being a sign. Yeah. But it kind of was just a sign at first when everyone thought it would be like so much more than that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's like a lot of ongoing like fights, I guess, to like really make things more legit and really like claim the territories back in our names and our traditional names. But language, I think, is a huge part of Tsimshian revitalization right now. And over the years, too, like, kind of, like, well, definitely, like, in response to, like, the educational colonization that has occurred, too. Mm-hmm. Where Sartlip Day School was, like, a school was built, like, further, and then it was run by... the church, at least to some extent, or entirely, I'm not exactly sure. But the nation reclaimed that school and made it like run by the nation. Mm. And then they named it, this was in the late 80s, they named it Tlaiwilnu Tribal School, which is still the name today. Tlaiwilnu is the mountain where the creator did a lot of the throwing of the stones. the mountain nearby that school on the peninsula, kind of in the center between all the villages on that peninsula. It's a really big peninsula. It's not just like a little one. Yeah, so that also is part of a story, with like the creation of our nation, Tsimshian. It's a flood story. I don't need to tell it right now because I've told so many, but, yeah. And it was a really big movement for families, students, like leaders to make that like our own school that we run and employ our people as much as possible to be doing the teaching. Mm-hmm. In the recent, how long has it been now? 15, 20 years? Like they've taught language a lot, like pretty much since it was like our school again. For those that can speak it and teach the language. But they've started to introduce an entire like immersion program where students can be in school entirely in Tsimshian, our language.
Wow, that's amazing.
Starting with elementary school, with I think just like maybe just preschool at first or kindergarten and grade one, but it's expanded like pretty much every year they add a new grade. Mm. So they're now into middle school, probably getting close to high school in like the next year or two. If they can find enough teachers. But yeah, there's like almost two full streams that they can take, either being in Synchrothan immersion or English school.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I think that's really impressive. One of the people that work at the school that I was chatting to just yesterday actually was saying that some of the students that have been in the immersion program are old enough now to, or will soon be old enough to, like be a camp leader for summer camp, so that they can, you know, the older students can be like teaching like the younger students, and all in immersion, not necessarily teaching, but like doing some fun summer camp things. Which is really cool. Like, really, like, I was proud of that moment even. Like, I'm not even like working in the school, or I'm not a teacher. I only know like so much of the language myself too. But I would love to be a kid in today's age for sure. Yeah, so language is a big part of it. Of course, like reuniting as Pusanich is a big part of it, like I mentioned earlier. Yeah, generally, like, people are starting to put work into healing, like intergenerational healing. Like, there's more community events. Like, we also have some craft nights and other things going on too. And there's so many unexplored things to like revitalize and reclaim. Something that I would like to see more of, I'm not as much of a like an artist with like pen and paper or any kind of ink, I guess. Although I could work on it, everyone can work on it. I feel like whenever I draw it, it'll be something like Doodle Bob from SpongeBob, or like, I don't know, some elementary school sketch or something. But something that I would like to see more of is reclaiming of traditional tattooing. So through one of my jobs earlier this year, I organized like a traditional tattoo workshop with a local tattoo artist, Stephanie Papik.
Love her. Yeah. Love Steph.
She been on the podcast yet?
No. But she's always with us on Caitlin's hands.
Yes. So, yes.
And wrists.
I was her first, you know, because she gave 22.
Okay, yeah. So she taught us like the mechanisms of like stick and poke tattooing, but also encouraged us to have like a lot of discussions on what tattoos look like in our culture, or our cultures, because it was like many different nations, like people were from all over at that workshop. And there's a lot of interest. I've already seen her do another one since then, and I'm hoping to see more of those. Hopefully other like facilitators come in and teach that too. There are some writings that I've seen in books on tattoos in this area, and they were not very many pictures though, but yeah, just some writings. And I've heard some really cool things too from other parts of the coast, where people would have like silver or metal jewelry that they would wear, like especially around their wrists. Or no, sorry, they would have tattoos around their wrists. But when tattoos were outlawed, or at least like very frowned upon, or like made you like a target in some way, or something, or however, like they kind of forced people to like stop tattooing themselves. People would wear jewelry in place of that, with like similar designs etched into the bands. And there's like probably so much more to it. So I love hearing about like tattoos and like things that I never really thought were like colonized, but like really like everything was like in so many different ways. Arts, like music, you know, stories, governance, yeah, so much. And there's been so many like interesting things too, throughout colonization. So like, of course, like baskets are like something traditional everywhere, pretty much. People would use different materials and different styles, but almost everyone had some way to make containers, like baskets, like weaving things. And around here, I think it would be like a lot of like cedar bark, or probably a lot of that for like some really strong things. Sorry. My stomach just got held again. Wow, I'm losing my train of thought. Oh, yes, but so baskets were, you know, a part of Pusanish culture and still are too. But for a while, there was a lot of cultural exchange between the Chinese community in town here and our nations. I think partially because, you know, being people of color and like a very colonial time, there was a lot of that. But from what I've heard too, I think some of the stores, like indigenous people couldn't go to all the stores or all the places in town even, but they could go to Chinatown for things. And also, even still, like a lot of people go to Chinatown for some like non-Western medicines and really appreciate mm-hmm. that because there's a lot of overlap in like practice and mm-hmm. Ideas between some of the treatments that they would have and that we would have. But sorry, this is a very long story for like basically just saying like for a while people were making baskets out of rattan. And there was even a word in Sinchothan for rattan. And it's just, yeah, really interesting to see like how like some things were colonized. So we lost access to a lot of like things on the land, but rattan was available through like some, not like forced like relations with like the Chinese community, but like situational relationships, yep, I guess. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And yeah, then that kind of became part of our culture through cultural exchange. So in a way, like it's hard to say that like that's an impact of colonization because it's like a beautiful story in its own way too. Mm-hmm. But it is an impact, and people persist throughout things and mm-hmm. find new ways to partake in culture, to create baskets, to tattoo themselves, to really do anything. There's yeah. ways to persist through anything in any circumstance, mm-hmm. and people find it. Mm. People are clever. I love what people are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting too how we look at like how language evolves through impacts of colonization. Mm-hmm. I remember like I was sitting in, I was in Ottawa for working on the decade for Indigenous languages. It was like a working group, and I'm sitting with like two other Inuit women who are like absolutely powerhouses, and like I very, very much look to them. And it's like one of them is like one of those people who like you scare me so much and I'm inspired so much at the same time that mm-hmm. like please don't yell at me because I will cry. but also like this lady gives me the biggest hugs every time she sees me, and I was like, oh, yeah, you're so cool, and I'm so nervous at the same time. And just talking mm-hmm. about like how Inuktitut has like changed of like with the influx of different technologies,
yep.
and then like how we can't go back to like pure Inuktitut or like old Inuktitut because it won't encompass the world that we live in currently,
mm-hmm.
the modernization of the world.
And the idea of like language evolves
mm-hmm.
over time, and so as much as we want to hold on to old languages, you got to imagine even language back. Even like pure language mm-hmm. would have evolved with the way the world would have changed anyways, and especially with people coming over and like honestly just trade within our own nations mm-hmm. across Turtle Island and other communities coming from other places, like we would have, our language would have evolved with that as well. And mm-hmm. I mean, you gotta look at today, like our languages are constantly evolving. I can't keep up with these kids, but
can't just keep up with the youth.
The youth are just, you say things and I'm confused. But I think that's like a nice, a healthier way to look at it and be like, we can't completely like, feel like guilt or shame that we can't necessarily pick up the traditional language the same way. We find the words and the communication that we need and that is useful and like we know that we're going to use and keep going forward,
mm-hmm.
And hope that we can at least preserve the majority of the language, but understand that it's not going to be the same and it's still going to evolve, yeah. As we go on. But
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, I often think about like, especially when like whenever someone talks about like, where would you go in time and space if you had a time machine and go anywhere? I think like it'd be so cool to go to like pre-contact
mm-hmm.
like any of my nations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's so much to that too. Like I wonder, like would I carry diseases that would spread?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
didn't come until colonization.
Mm-hmm.
Like, also, what would they think of me? Like, mm-hmm. even if I had learned so much language, I would have an accent, and to them, I would I would be speaking language, but I'd be like, oh, yeah, a hoser. I'd have a Canadian accent to them. And I think about that, too. Like, I wonder how much, like, language, even for those that are speaking it, like, now a lot, like, how much of an accent, how much of their accent has impacted the language, too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's not always a bad thing. Like, change is so good and so beautiful in so many ways, too. And essential, too, of course. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, like, there's, like, committees and panels of people that are speakers of so many different languages that come up with terms that wouldn't, that they don't have currently, to bring into the language, like words for the planets or stars or spaceships or I don't know, like the randomest things, like a television or TikTok or mac and cheese, like anything like that, you know.
Describing the leaves changing color was the biggest one that I've learned recently. Is like almost every other language has like a specific word to describe that, and then I go, they change color. Yeah. And they're like, what? No, they change. They're like, no word. And I was like, that's it. It's a sentence.
Yeah.
I've heard even Iceland like does a lot of that too, mm-hmm. because you know English is taking over in a lot of countries. Mm-hmm. So like so much, like even in Norway, like people speak a lot of, like they pop in a bunch of English terms into all sorts of phrases and mm-hmm. idioms even too, especially. But I've heard in Iceland, they've created a word for Lady Gaga and like so many other like, things. That, like, is that even necessary?
Yeah.
But it's cool. Yeah. I love change and seeing it. Yeah. Reflecting on it at least too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my next question is a little wonky in the sense of, like, it kind of just mixes in with the other one. Mm-hmm. It's mostly just a question about, like, what more do you think needs to be done for decolonization, for reclamation? And that's a very big question. I like to ask big questions and go, and go!
I want a word for Lady Gaga and St. John.
All right. Okay. Like, that's the next step. That's the next step.
Oh, yeah. I can go for this one first. I'll continue a bit on language. I've soaked in so much on it. Like, I'm not even that much of a language speaker. I just love to think about it and hear about mm-hmm. it. And I would like to, like, find better opportunities to learn my language. But a lot of, like, what I'm really noticing as of recently, too, is because some of the teachers and knowledge holders have come out with and published a Sinchothan dictionary mm-hmm. with, like, English translations, and it's, like, very impressive. There's, like, a lot in it, and I'm sure it's going to come, like, a lot further, like, over the years, too. I've heard that they're even working on, like, a grammar dictionary. I don't even know what that is, like, regularly, but I'm guessing it's, like, sentence structure and things, too.
That's pretty cool.
Because it's very
verbs.
Different.
I think verbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, French.
Oh, side note, too. I love how much, like, Native people compare our culture to Star Wars. I don't know if it's just, like, Coast Salish. But I feel like that's been brought up so much. Like, people compare, like, certain things to, like, the Force. But also, like, they compare, like, generally how people speak in Sinchothan to how Yoda speaks, so it's a little bit backwards.
Okay.
Which is kind of helpful from, like, the little bit that I know, at least. But I'm starting to notice that as a theme. Like, Natives love Star Wars, but also love, like, you know, finding overlap and connections to Star Wars.
Fight back the Empire.
Yep.
True. Yeah. Yep. Empire back.
Yeah.
I was going with this though, language, and we need our own term for Star Wars.
Mm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, with the dictionary, yes. Even in the dictionary though, like as good as it is, there's some very interesting takes on some terms, especially around sexuality and gender. Mm. So they do like list the sources on where the words and definitions and translations come from. And some of them are people like from generations ago that are no longer here. But the only thing that I can find on sexuality and gender is under the definitions for man and the definitions for woman. And one of the sub examples is like a phrase like, this man is a woman and this woman is a man. And then after that in brackets, I think it's like she is a homosexual or something like that. It's like it's very, very wrong. Like that's not what like gender is not sexuality. Yeah. And like it shouldn't be said like that in any way. And I do know that there's more to it than that, from what I've heard from other people too. And even like yeah, pronouns are something that should be included, but pronouns of course exist differently in all sorts of different languages. But I do know that there's a lot of space for people of diverse genders. The language itself is very gender neutral. There's only like one word for like aunt or uncle, and it's the same. It's like sage. Same with like grandparents and sibling. But sibling also means cousin, and there's two terms for that. But it's your older sibling or cousin, your younger one. It's not gender based. Like so much of it is not gender based. So I think a lot on like gender and sexuality, especially with education, could come a lot further. And hopefully like looking towards like our past and seeing what we do know of what things were like pre-contact and what things were like before they were affected by residential schools and European gender norms and things. But also potentially coming up with like new things, like how people come up with new terms and evolve into their own terms. So I think there's a lot of space for that in Husseinich. I think like things are really evolving. So like I don't know what to say like other than that. Like things are changing, and like I have a lot of trust in the people that are leading these changes. But like things can change, and like so I'm a bit of like a geek and like a techie at times too. So I love like doing what I can for some things, like with language too. So I was able to translate the video game Minecraft into Sinchothan. And I was hoping like someone might use that, because I've heard of like Minecraft for education. I don't know much about that, and I'm not a teacher, but hoping like someone might use that at some point. But my next step is to like take what I did and make it into a template so other nations can translate Minecraft too, because there are other nations that are using Minecraft and they like build their traditional structures and things like that, but I think the game itself is still in English. But to have it translated could mean that like the kids playing in it or whatever they're doing in the classroom even could stay in immersion if they are immersion, or they could become immersion through it even. Yeah, I think it's really fun because like it is kind of like a land-based game, like not land-based like as actually being on the land, but the game is about you know, navigating the forests and oceans and things, and there's zombies and all that. So like those things, it's like I can't look up the term for zombies in the dictionary. So I'll need more help on that at some point too. But yeah, I just love like seeing and doing and really cool techie things to do with culture and thinking about the future and what we should be expecting too, because I think we should start to like see more, because there's a lot of books that are like being translated, but I think like other things can be, and like there can be a lot more room for culture and language in a lot more places. So I'm excited to see what's to come with that. I think I'm just really impressed by the school, because that really helps like more than just the students, helps like the whole families too. So I think things are on a good track. I think I'll leave it at that.
Thanks so much, Peter. There's so much interesting things going on. Also, I think I know some people you can talk to about Minecraft and Sinchothan and stuff and things. Because it is the decade of Indigenous languages.
So I'll queue up.
Yeah, I know some people.
My people will call your people.
Yeah. All right, Mar. What would you like to see for the future? Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll like bring it back in the context of what I've shared, like of things that have been taking place locally for me, and I definitely what Peter shared In terms of like gender and sexuality and the teachings, a lot of ceremony and teachings that haven't caught up to like in acknowledging the realities and like who are like two-spirit and queer relatives are and kind of like what they need to feel like they can be welcomed and participate in ceremony. That is something that I feel really passionate about is making sure that like centering those experiences in a space that or like in a space that I hold or like co-create with my cousins. Another thing is the outlook or like a lot of folks' perspective on folks who use substances and just like the immense shame and stigma that is projected and placed on those folks and like keeping them away from ceremony that and of course like yeah of course like n- not everyone would want to access ceremony but those who do are like turned away from a lot of ceremonial spaces and just different like protocols or practices that that name like folks need to be like sober for X amount of days before something before participating and things like that that aren't necessarily or like wouldn't be accessible to some folks and I think like that's another huge impact of colonialism is like that harshness and lack of care for community members who are coping in a way that's harder for other people to accept and to process. I think, just having, in my own journey, experiencing how like I felt really isolated and like not welcome in spaces at times and and the things that and I wasn't facing the stigma that like that people who use substances do face and so I was or in those times I would just think about it and like could only imagine how much like inner like or like how much inner hurt they carry and it's like it's so harmful and it's just Or, like, it's one thing that perpetuates that harm and that shame, mm-hmm. is, like, exclusion of those folks who use substances in ceremony spaces. I think that, I guess, like, yeah, those are two things that I really, or that feel really important to me, and that, we're not turning folks away, for, like, any reason. Like, if they want to be mm-hmm. there, then, like, we do what we can to, like, meet them as community. Mm-hmm. Those are, like, some things that I could think of. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's definitely, like, things that I've come across working at the Friendship Center, is that, like, there are a few programs that are going that, like, they're like, you come as you are, and we'll still smudge, we'll still do all sorts of different things. Like, we're not expecting you to, like, have to be sober for at least 24 hours, like, nothing like that. It's being like, you want to be in the space, you feel like you need to be in this space, we want you to be in this space. And so I thought that was very beautiful, because I know, like, right out of the gate when I was being taught about ceremony, they're like, you can't do this, you can't do that, you cannot come if you're doing this or having that. And I went, that's very restricting, and the people who are going through and struggling with substances, they're usually the ones that need the most connection and support, and this is something that, like, they long for. Like, mm-hmm. why are we not giving that space for them to be able to do it and have that connection? So, yeah, I would love to see that evolve and change more as well.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. It needs to. And, like, mm-hmm. this whole, like, I think a lot of folks maybe don't see, like, a bigger picture, or are really, have had different experiences to maybe see, to obviously have different perspectives. Mm-hmm. though, of, like, kind of, like, reframing of, like, all of us are impacted by colonialism, mm-hmm. and we're living in our communities have been detrimented due to colonialism. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of living in a post-apocalyptic world for many of our nations. Yeah. We're trying to mm-hmm. grapple with that in the best way we can at mm-hmm. this time, mm-hmm. as we
yeah.
rebuild. And it's going to look different for everybody.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like flipping that around, I think, is very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I think we've come to our final question as well in this.
I finally remember it this time.
Oh my goodness. Caitlin asks the last question, and last time she went, what question is that? And I was like, okay, you're supposed to look professional.
Come on. You're like, you're the one that came up with this question that you don't write down. So it's my own doing. Okay. What are both your top three favorite things about being from the nation you're from? Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are Marlo's top three favorite things about being Anishinaabe? What are Peter's top three favorite things about being Wasanich?
We really enjoy this one, because some people go, we weren't prepped for this question.
No. And it's, like, a little different. It's very self-reflective. Mm-hmm. I like it. I don't know what to say, though.
You can think of one, that also works. That works. You don't have to come up with three right
but
now.
But usually, what people are like, I'll just do one, and then go, and then this one, and then this one, mm-hmm. and then this mm-hmm. one. And I was like, exactly.
I think... not, like, something that I feel so lucky for is, like, connection to community. And even though, like, as I've said so far that like so much of that connection was lacking for me growing up. There was still so much of a community structure around me growing up, like with my aunties and like my grandparents. We were so tight-knit and close, even though like there was still like conflict and people like different tensions. We were really together and like there for one another. And I think of how like my mom is like she'll like she has such a big heart and is so giving, mm-hmm. and like will help anybody in like things that they're struggling in, and like with no kind of like no question or mm-hmm. like no pause, she'll like take on supporting.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, I guess like, or a recent example is when I moved back to my res, I went, and it was actually in this process of like wanting to find a knowledge keeper to help us with the Sweat Lodge project. Mm-hmm. And so my mom, I'm like a really shy person, and like I'm not comfortable to approach somebody just like that. It's a family member, but I don't know them well. So my mom brought me, and I'm 27 years old, and my mom brought me to the an uncle's house and knocked on the door, and we were both standing there, and she was like, "This is like what Marlo's working on," whatever, like told the uncle what was going on, and so then him and I were connected, and the next, like within the next week, he like dropped in at my house, and we started like a conversation, and he was like, "Okay, well, I know like this person, they may be able to help you," and then like my brother, he can do this for you. And just in that one like meeting, I was then connected to like a network of like four or five other people. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, I mean, yeah, in a like a white town or something, if you went to, or I don't know, like went to the neighbor, they wouldn't, the result wouldn't be,
yeah,
or would most likely not be the same. But mm-hmm. it was like realizing that, or realizing how much we actually are connected. Yeah. When I first moved there, I was like, just felt so alone. But anyway, yeah, that's like a really big one for me.
I love that. Mm-hmm. The whole idea mm-hmm. of being like, honestly, if you just approach a relative and be like, "Hey, doing a thing," and they're like, "Let me tell you about all the other relatives who are
doing things
who could also help with that thing." Mm-hmm. Like, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that's just that's probably what I'll share for now.
Okay.
But yeah, community is like just it's everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's been a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like it's up there for me, too. The people. Other Hussein-ish people. Yeah. Really kind, beautiful people that are very connected. Especially, I love it especially because, like, now, in today's age, like, being, like, a nation that's, like, in a city, a city with, like, a lot of things going on. Like, there's, really what I'm trying to say is that, like, a lot of people come and go from the city, whether it's, like, for school, like, university, or jobs, because there's, like, government jobs here. And they leave for all sorts of reasons, too. Like, there's a housing crisis going on right now. Mm-hmm. I think, once again, we were just named, like, the most expensive city in BC.
Woo.
Beating out Vancouver, of all places, too. Oh, for now, it's always back and forth between, yeah. So people come and go a lot, but it's nice to have people that are, like, indigenous here that have a reason to, like, stay here
mm-hmm.
and find ways mm-hmm. to, like, be able to stay here and be connected to relatives that way. But it's a beautiful place, like, geographically. Like, on the peninsula, one side you, like, overlook, like, the archipelagos, and even to the mainland. There's, like, a beautiful mountain on the mainland, Mount Baker. The other side of the peninsula, you're looking into, like, a beautiful fjord between Hussein-ish and Malahat, and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, salmon go through that inlet and fjord into the creek, and yeah, love the area. Lots of woods, huge trees. Yeah, it smells good here.
Can't say that about other places.
No. Yeah. And then a third is like when you said that, the first thing that came to mind was like salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I need this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm due to cook some salmon for sure.
Those are all beautiful.
Those are three great things.
Yeah. Three great things that we also get to take part in, too. Mm-hmm. Very blessed for that.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, my friends.
Well, Alio.
Yeah, Kliyanami for spending time. Chimigwech. Aishka?
Yeah, I was like, we know all of them.
Yeah.
We were doing this last night. We're just like, let go, let go. Just start going up the island.
Yeah. For spending some time with us. Hope you enjoyed your time
mm-hmm.
chatting with us. And of course, we would love to have both of you back to share some more stories.
We could just do stories next time, honestly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Peter really wants to tell the story of the creator throwing things.
Throwing things. Yeah. Let me tell you about the rocks.
Oh, I gotta practice them again. Yeah. Oh, maybe that should be the new Hussein-ish workout. Just throwing things.
Throwing rocks like creator did.
The workout given to us by creator.
Yeah. Well, teacher, where you can find us?
You can, well, first of all, please, we are trying to get to 1,000 followers on Instagram.
Yes.
Please follow us on Instagram at @SpillingLabTea_Cedar Trees. We also have a TikTok that's also at @SpillingLabTea_Cedar Trees.
Mm-hmm.
You can see our beautiful faces on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Podcasts. Honestly, if you just type in SpillingLabTea_Cedar Trees on Google, you can find them all.
Because we have a wonderful new website with updated photos from the whole team
mm-hmm.
at www.spillingtea.ca. We can find all the episodes on there as well.
Yeah.
So, my friends, thanks again.
And we'll see you mm-hmm. next time.
See you next time.
Namoltis.